interview with Mr. Frank Faulkner, presumably done about April 1961, re-recorded March 1980.
Yeah, as I wanted to tell you, he told me to talk to Richard Hall.
Well, I came here, of course, first of all, in 1910. That was 2 years before the railway.
And Mr. Whiteley freed stuff up for you, didn't he? He said he did.
Oh yes, in those early years, of course, all the merchandise for the whole of the North was freighted in here by team. I can even recall ox teams hauling freight from Edmonton into here. But we used to get most of our heavy goods freighted in during the winter months when the sleighing was good. And I can recall having freight hauled in here all the way from Edmonton. That is what we call heavy goods, for 75 cents a hundred.
Is that right?
Yes. As cheap as 75 cents. We paid nearly that to the railways in our days. But it is also true, of course, that a dollar would buy quite a bit more than it does today. But I can definitely recall having freight hauled in by team all the way from Edmonton into here during the winter months when the thing was good. For as cheap as 75 cents a hundred.
Now, when would that be? That would be before the railroad came in,
yes,
wouldn't it?
Oh, yes, yes, because naturally enough, after the arrival of the railway, there was no freighting done then at all. The railroad brought all our freight in. But the railway didn't get in here until
Mrs. Faulkner said.
Yes, that is about right. if I remember correctly, the first regular train pulled into the yard here the middle of October, 1913. But we came in, of course, in 1910, which meant that in those years prior to the arrival of the railway, all our freight was hauled by team from Edmonton to here.
Do you recall Mr. Whiteley hauling in those days?
Oh, very well, yes. You are speaking of Rinner Whiteley, of
course. That's right.
I knew his parents even. They lived down the line somewhere about Perryvale.
They had a stopping house.
Yeah. And yes, they used to operate what we called a stopping house in those days. And many of the freighters would make that an overnight stop. But Rainer, I think, was born at Perryvale or somewhere.
No, Stony Plain.
He was born
in Stony Plain. From Stony Plain. No, no, he wasn't born down there.
Well, He was just a young lad anyway when I first knew him. But he did haul freight for me in the early years.
Now,
and, there was quite a volume of freight because we must remember this, that in those years, everything consigned to the North Country came to Athabasca Landing. Everything. All the mail and freight of all kinds. The Hudson's Bay Company had big freight warehouses here in those early years that would hold thousands of tons of freight. And I'm not exaggerating. The Hudson's Bay alone used to build between 200 and 300 scows here every year. Now, a scow is a flat-bottom boat about 50 feet long and roughly around 12 feet wide, and they would carry an average of from 7 to 10 tons of freight, each one of them.
They were going up the river both ways, were they up on the river?
Well, there was very little freight went up river.
Oh, I see.
Some in their years, even some of the early river settlers came in this way.
What years would these river settlers have come in? No, about?
Anywhere from 1915.
Mm-hmm.
And then the old Grand Trunk built west from Edmonton. A good many of the early settlers, Peace River settlers, went into that country from Edson.
Oh, yeah.
You know where Edson is. It's about 125 miles west of
Edmonton. That's right.
But many went in this way. Steamers on the river here, and traveled of the way into the Peace River country by water. The Wadham Leslie Lake emptied to the Athabasca River at a point of 50 miles west, what is now known as Smith.
Mirror.
But in the early years, we call it Mirror Landing. If the post office still Maryland, but I'm not sure, but the race station is in Smith. However, it's about 50 miles west here. But many of the early Peace River settlers went in that way. At least they came through here and then went west upriver to Mirror Landing. From there they could still go by water up the Little Slave River and get on to Lesser Slave Lake, which is quite a good sized body of water. It runs in my mind that it's about 90 miles long or 100 miles, somewhere about there.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, they could travel by water to the west end of Lesser Slave Lake, and then they had a portage across by land to Peace River, about 90 miles, I think.
Mm-hmm. What did you do, Mr. Faulkner? Can you recall some of the things you did for enjoyment in those days? I'm thinking of the curling that I heard so much about in those early days, and I think it's very interesting. some of those, what you did, the things you did for enjoyment.
Well, it's true, in the early year, during the winter months, when I first came in here, they had a curling rink already established, a single sheet of ice, and it was down about, yes, right on the same site that the government buildings are on now.
Pretty close down there, wasn't it?
It was right on that same site.
Yeah.
And it had been started just 1 year before I came here, so that would be in 1909.
I see. And you were quite a challenged curler in those days, I hear, too.
Well, I did quite a bit of curling. I had curled a little bit before I came here, and nothing would do. I was appointed a skip, and
J.P. Evans was some of your...
Oh, he didn't curl for...
Well, J.P. came in after I did.
Yeah.
He opened a yard here for the Crown Lumber Company.
Mm-hmm.
He came here from Nelson, B.C.
Uh-huh.
It was a year or two after I came in, because the Crown Lumber Company didn't open a yard until after the railway got in here.
I see.
And then they shipped old B.C. lumber, you know, and coast lumber, and Mr. Evans was in charge of the yard when they first opened it.
Bert asked him who was on his first curling team.
Yeah, can you recall the members of your first curling team?
Yes, I think I can.
Bobby Vance,
Arthur Daniel, J. Daniel, you remember of him anyway, yes.
Tommy Wood.
Bobby Vance. And Tommy Wood, I think that's it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be around, what year was it? Would that be? That's around 1910.
In 1910, yes. But the rink was underway just 1 year prior to that. They started a curling club in 1909.
Uh-huh.
And the man who was largely responsible for it was a man by the name of Wood, James H. Wood.
He was the same Wood that was a mayor here for a while?
He was our first mayor.
That's right.
Yes. James H. Wood.
Uh-huh.
He was quite an old-timer here. Oh, he'd been settled in town for some few years before we arrived. He and some of our earlier settlers were originally Klondikers.
Yes, that's interesting too. We've come across some of that history.
Have you?
Yeah. Can you tell us something about the Klondikers?
Well,
but they stayed here, some of them, didn't they?
Yes. In the early years, when the Klondike was first discovered, people didn't know very much about the means or the ways of travel, if you understand what I mean.
Yes.
So they would simply get hold of a map of Canada. They knew roughly where the Klondike was, yeah. up in Alaska. But according to the maps that we had at that time, the shortest route into the Klondike was from Edmonton up to here. Then they had water to see clean to the west end of Lesserly's Lake, and then they could travel up the Peace River to Dunvegan. Well, according to the map, it looked like a mere step from Dunvegan into the Klondike. Of course, it was quite a healthy step. But a good many people came through this way in the early years, and some of our earliest settlers did get as far as Dunvegan. But by the time they arrived there, they had some appreciation of what lay ahead of them, and many of them turned around and came back.
That's right.
And some of them stopped here. I'm not going to say that the place was so attractive or anything of that kind, but they probably ran out of money. They couldn't go any further.
Yeah, but there were some real attractions in those days, and the romance of this town.
Oh yes, I imagine there was. As I say, in the early years, this was the jumping off place for the whole North.
Uh-huh.
Everything that went into the North Country, freight, passengers, and there was considerable tonnage. Not that there were so many white people living in the North at that time, but the natives, you see, they were, oh yes, thousands of them, all the way from here clean through to Iqaluit. And the Hudson's Bay Company established trading posts pretty well all through the North, and they would ship their heavy freight, non-freezable stuff, from Edmonton into here during the winter time, and warehouse it and build scows then early in the spring of the year. They would have many of them ready about the time the river ice would go out. Mm-hmm. And they would send these, we used to call them flotillas, out. Well, there was at least two of these big flotillas would go out each year. One as soon as the river was clear of ice, and then a later one, possibly along in July somewhere. But there would be from 200 to 300 scows in each of those flotillas. One man on each scow who operated a big steering oar at the back. There was no power.
No.
They just floated down river. But he kept them, the scow out in the channel. And they would or usually tie up every night, you know. They didn't often run during the night time because they had to stay out in the channel of the river to keep away from sandbars and things of that kind.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Faulkner, you represented this constituency in the legislature at Edmonton once. Do you recall the years that you represented the constituency?
Yes. I was from 1930 to 1935.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What government was it?
Well, the government of the day at that time was what we call the UFA.
That's right.
The old farmer government.
Yeah.
And I ran here as a liberal candidate, mm-hmm. and I was elected in 1930. Mm-hmm. Well, then I ran again in 35, but that was the year that our old friend Bible Biddle appeared on the scene, you know, and $25 a month was too much of a drawing card. We couldn't overcome it.
Well, that's sure interesting. But is there any more questions? Some of the things that happened, and even Mr. Faulkner again with some humorous headlines would be very interesting if you can think of any humorous things, because we're looking for them.
Well, there is Mr. Daniel.
What about this first car? What did it come?
Oh yes, it was a Cadillac. It belonged to Captain Barber. You know, he was the head of the Northern Transportation here, head of the steamships, and he went overseas. And he died after. He and J.K. Cornwell were in partnership. Then Captain Barber went overseas after that, and he died as a result of the war, but he died after he came back. And he had the first car. It was a Cadillac.
Could he operate it?
Oh, yes. Well, there weren't anything extra, but I remember having a ride out in the country in April, in this, just shortly after Doris was born, you know. That's how I remember these things. And another time when we got into Edmonton on a construction train in June, and we rode in a caboose.
What year?
1912. We rode in a caboose, and we got that far. But when we got to Edmonton, they wouldn't let us come back. So we had to hire a car. And I think there were three of us in the car, and it was pouring rain, and it cost us $100 to get from Edmonton to Athabasca. And this hill, which is the South Hill up here, was the old Edmonton Trail. We had to back down that about 12 o'clock at night, and it was pitch dark. It was rutted, you know, and rough. But that was...
Did they call that the old landing trail in those days, or was
that the old landing trail? Well, yeah. It was the Edmonton Trail, but it was the old landing trail too. Mm-hmm. This was the.
Did you come up in one day with the car?
Oh yes. In fact, yes. Do you remember that trip, Dad? Remember when we brought Marcel home from? Yes, I think we left in the afternoon and got home at night. I think we left right after dinner, Dr. Rick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you come by way of Waugh and those other places, Eggies?
We came by Eggies, oh, yes. But,
there's something I was interested in. Were you and Mr. Faulkner married?
When
you come up here first.
Yes, we had Jean.
Can you remember your first trip up here?
Oh yes, very well. We came by stage.
You came by stage then, eh?
Well, we called it a stage, but it was what I'd call an Easter three-seated Democrat. And the driver on our stage was Sterling McKinley. And then there were two stagecoaches came. And Sterling McKinley drove ours. And we had, I think Mrs. Bilday was on that trip. Remember, Babe Jones' mother? And then the driver of the other bus was, what was his name?
Shorty Kennedy.
Yeah, Shorty Kennedy. Shorty Kennedy, he was a little, his father owned the bus line.
I knew him.
Yes, did you?
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful trip. It was all staked out. It was in the autumn. It was about in October.
How long did it take you?
Oh, from 2 days. We stopped at Eggie's overnight. And there was a stopping house out where we got dinner, had dinner. And then at Eggie's we stopped overnight. And then the next, I don't know where we got the breakfast. Oh, yes, Eggie's, we had our breakfast. And then the next stopping house was Tom Lewis's.
Very good.
Yes, we had our dinner there. And we got in about 6 o'clock at night. pull in at the old Grand Union.
You had a house to go to then?
Oh, no. Yes, yes, we did. We had this next door, but I wouldn't live in it.
Well, those numerous things are interesting.
Yes.
Well, of course, I can remember quite well
Slavic people come, Ukrainian, Polish people, that type.
say 13, 14, 15, there was quite an influx. And then you probably recall, it wasn't in your day, but it was in mine, the colored people who came here.
Yeah.
I don't know just how many of them live in what we call Amber Valley Settlement.
Who do you think was the first colored man to come to that area?
The first that I recall was a chap that we call Heck Robbins. But he didn't live out in the Amber Valley settlement. He took up a farm or a homestead just east of town in what we used to call the Poplar Ridge settlement. He was the first colored man that I can recall.
Did Jeff Edwards come later?
Yes. Jeff, if I remember correctly, came in here somewhere about 14 or 15. And there was quite an influx of them, most of them from Oklahoma. And we never had many of them who lived in town. There were a few here from time to time, but they settled out in what is known today as the Amber Valley District and took up land. And while not too zealous as a race, they are good gardeners, nearly all of them, and are pretty well able to maintain themselves. I can recall during the Hungry 30s, well, I was the member in the provincial house from 30 to 35 during the Depression years. And the calls that were made on us for relief were not excessive. And I would venture to say that the colored settlement were as well able to look after themselves as any other race of people who came in here.
Was there a period when the Ukrainian people came in greater numbers than others? Just gradually drift in?
I don't remember any given year that I can recall when they came in greater numbers than others. They gradually drifted in. And as you know, we have certain areas that support or maintain quite an active population of the Ukrainian people. But during the Depression years, they were pretty well able to take care of themselves. They didn't make any great demands on us. And at that time, we only had two or three organized municipalities. In other words, we had a lot of what we called local improvement district, which was administered by the government. And the member, of course, was called on to quite an extent to supervise certain of their work. But the RCMP pretty well looked after the local improvement district as far as the relief was concerned. And that is quite a story in itself. We had, I can recall one chap who was in charge of the RCMP detachment here, was a very good-hearted chap, and I think they did sort of play on him at one time, to the extent that the government of the day shifted him and sent him way down southern Alberta somewhere, and they put in a chap to replace him who was a pretty hard-boiled Scotchman. Things were not so easy after that for the relief recipients. It may have been warranted, I don't know, but I knew the chap quite well, but he isn't here any longer, or has been moved away for some time, though I don't know whether he's still with the force, but probably he's retired.
Was his name Mackay?
That's his name, yes. That's the chap, all right.
I guess Mr. Faulkner had quite a time. He got the cage over the river, did you know that?
Beg pardon?
You got the cage over the river about that time, did you? Or started work to get the cage over the river?
Yes, it was while he was in the house he got the cage over the river.
Yeah, and I noticed that...
We'll have to have a tape on Mrs. Faulkner, too. She remember things that he won't, you see.
Well, all the North River country at that time was what we called local improvement districts. There were no organized municipalities over there. As a matter of fact, they never did have a municipal district organized north of the river. And that was when they brought in the county system. I think that was the more to put the responsibility on local administration, relieved the RCMP of quite a bit of work of that nature.
Well, that's very interesting.